You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay.
Hey there, welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast, and I want to thank you for joining us here after a 117-108 win over the Toronto Raptors. The manic roller coaster Boston Celtics are back. They're good again. Everything's great. We're the Raina Jays. I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com. Samuel Jamison Packard III.
Damn.
Joins me tonight, also known as Ladies Love Cool Jam. Still gets me. It was the different inflection. It was the two different.
You got to change it up a bit. It's two different jams.
I'm trying to keep it together, but this is clearly the best innovation this podcast has had in years. Kyrie Irving was freaking amazing in this one. We got to watch our language. People are talking about our language.
Yeah, apparently I cussed too much. That was the one review we got from noted Celtics reporter. Oh, who shall remain nameless for now.
Kyrie Irving, gosh darn it, was freaking amazing. 27 points, 18 assists. That's a lot. That's more than he's ever had. And the Celtics, again, beat the Raptors. So everything's fixed, right, Sam?
I mean, maybe. I mean, like, is this like the least surprising Celtics result we could have gotten? Like you just had a feeling with the Celtics team coming home, playing against a better opponent. Like they're plenty capable of playing this well. We saw this in the last four games. That's what kind of made the three-game losing streak so nonsensical. It's like, it's not like they were lacking in talent. It was just kind of, I don't know if it's a home road thing. I don't know if it's just like a playing down to your competition thing, but them coming back and beating the Raptors is like not surprising in the least. And so I'm sure they're going to have a number of games at home in the next month, where I think they have like 11 of 15 games at home, and they're going to win a bunch. And then they're going to lose a really dumb game on the road to like probably the Knicks or something. And there's a very up and down season, but I like you can talk about the ability to like turn on and off the switch. And like maybe you'd rather them be more consistent, but it's good that they can turn it on like that. That's still a good thing.
It is still a good thing. And it's kind of funny that guys said after the game, that was one of the big topics after the game, that they just need a way to find that energy. And they didn't exactly come storming out of the gate either. That game started off a little kind of bad for the Celtics. They were down, I believe, 18-7 at one point.
I think it was 20-8. I think they were down 12.
Yeah. So they were in a bad way at the beginning of the game here. So Celtics, they were forced to call a timeout, with the Raptors kind of, making a 9-0 run early, but then things started to fall into place. It started with like Gordon Hayward had a good game. Al Horford was good for stretches. A lot of the things that we've been talking about have happened in this game. Like, Kyrie did his thing, but Al Horford, we were talking about him and his knee and resting it. Then he comes out and he has a good game, closing the game out, and he finished with 24 points, 7 rebounds. Kind of funny, only one assist for Al Horford, which is odd. Jason Tatum comes out with a double-double. Jaylen Brown had, I think, a decent game, though didn't show up much in the stat sheet. Gordon Hayward showed up and had 18 points on 61.5% shooting. Like, all of these things that we're talking about, they showed up. And I don't know. I guess the question is it the competition? Is it the road? What is it? I don't know. But the biggest problem for these guys is just the consistency.
Yeah, it doesn't make that much sense. But, like, I was looking at Hayward's home and road shooting splits, and it's like two different players. And Like, there's the classic, like, we talk about it more in the playoffs, but, like, road player, like, role players play much better at home just because they're more comfortable. Like, that, because it's such a trope, like, makes sense to me, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like we haven't spent enough time talking about Kyrie Irving tonight.
Which we will, in depth, but, yeah, I just wanted to bring up these other things to kind of get them out of the way before we get into the Kyrie stuff. But if you want to dive into Kyrie, let's do it.
Okay, let's dive into the Kyrie. At one point, this game was tied 94-94. Then on the – basically the Celtics' next 20 – or let me do my math here. Yeah, next 23 points, Kyrie either assisted or scored on every single possession. He was – his fourth quarter, he had 10 points, 10 of his 27, 6 assists, had one crazy fuck you three. Sorry for swearing. He had a steal and a block. He was just dominant down the stretch. And for a while there, I thought it was going to be this kind of Kyrie Kawhi Leonard battle, but, and Kawhi had some crazy moments. He had an and one, that put the Raptors up four. And I just like, oh man, like the Celtics are done here, but you got to give the Celtics credit. Like in the last 4 minutes, Kawhi didn't score any points and he had some bad shots. It was a great combination of Kyrie taking over on offense, but the Celtics did a great job kind of shutting down Kawhi on defense. And one, just forcing him into like playing good, solid one-on-one defense, not really letting him get to the rim. And then just when he didn't have the ball, really denying and basically, okay, Kyle Lowry, you are either hurt or pretending to be hurt. You can try to do things. Danny Green, like everyone around Kawhi tonight just didn't do great. So I thought like, just on the defensive end in the fourth, the Celtics did an amazing job. And then just putting Kyrie in the position to just dominate. It's insane that the Celtics won this game by 9 because it was tied with like 2.5 minutes to go. And then they just completely dominated. And I think that's kind of the way they won the first game, or at least the overtime in the game in Toronto. And the reverse happened when the Celtics played in Toronto. So I think home court, if these two teams do end up playing in the playoffs, will be pretty important, and it's not great to be looking up at the Raptors right now, but the Celtics really just pulled away, and I think Brad mentioned it after the game. They showed two moments of resiliency. When first, it was early on when they were able to kind of come back and erase that 12-point deficit, and then it was here in the fourth quarter. They give up this big lead, and they get down by 4 3 different times and just – they give it to Kyrie and he kind of leads them to the promised land. It was very impressive. And he was just dominant late. It was like one of the best Kyrie performances I think we've seen since the last time he beat the Raptors.
Yes. Also a good game against the Raptors there. I mean, Kyrie was brilliant down the stretch, and it was a matter of, he did things that Kawhi Leonard didn't. And it's just, sometimes you make shots, sometimes you don't, but the Raptors do have a tendency that when they're kind of stuck, they go to Kawhi. And if Kawhi's not delivering, it's hard for these other guys to deliver. Even Kyle Lowry. Like, Kyle Lowry took a shot there that he almost felt like – it's funny to say this about Kyle Lowry, but he had no business taking.
It was a horrendous 28-footer with 20 seconds on the shot clock when they're up four and, like, they have all this momentum. It was a terrible shot.
It felt like that – well, see, if he had made it, people would be like, oh, my God, the ball's on that guy.
And he had made, like, a crazy 28-footer, I think, earlier in the quarter that is just, like, you kind of shrug. But he clearly didn't have it tonight. He scored, he had finished with 10 points. And I feel like most of those came in the first quarter. But he was not dangerous at all. Like, there was basically anytime anyone had the ball other than Kawhi Leonard and, I guess, Serge Ibaka and Greg Monroe. So, I mean, the Raptors did a pretty good job of scoring on the inside, but I feel like that's kind of what the Celtics were letting them get. But once it came down to crunch time, it's not like you're going to go to Serge Ibaka in the like clutch for on a short roll while he's moving. It's just like, it was basically put into Kawhi's hands, and I thought he was going to go full supernova, but it just didn't work out for him.
It did not work out for him. A lot of the guys, like I said earlier, a lot of the guys that we'd been criticizing had good games. I think it's important to, because we get on Terry Rozier a lot, I think it's important to recognize a good game, even though statistically, you look at 5 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist in 19 minutes, and people say, oh, there goes Terry again. He had problems, but he didn't have problems. I think in the second quarter, he was probably the number one reason why in the second quarter the Celtics were able to come back from that deficit. They went into the quarter down 36-30. They got down as much as, what, 12? And then here comes Terry Rozier picking up full court, playing a level of defense that we haven't seen from him in a while, a very active defense. And he was part of the big energy change. Gordon Hayward did a lot in that stretch offensively, but Terry Rozier, and after the game, we had Al Horford, Brad Stevens, Gordon Hayward, all praising Terry Rozier for the energy change in the second quarter. And that's a big deal. And as I always like to say, clutch play doesn't come in the fourth quarter all the time. I think that was a very important stretch because that could have gotten away from the Celtics. And all of a sudden the energy changed and the second unit came in and did a phenomenal job to take the lead. And Rozier was, if we're going to criticize Rozier, you have to give him credit. He was at the forefront of that.
No, the second unit dominated in the second quarter. They, for the first 9 minutes of that quarter, they held the Raptors to 8 points. And so it really started on the defensive end, and that started with Terry Rozier picking up full court. He was aggressive on defense, but like in a controlled manner, if that makes any sense. I feel like a lot of the mistakes Terry Rozier has made defensively this year has been kind of jumping out or going for steals on the passing lanes, or kind of jumping out on screens where he shouldn't necessarily do so. But tonight, I think it helped with the Celtics switching on everything, and he was just very aggressive with terms of ball pressure. But you're right, he was like, I had in my notes multiple times, like, great defense by Terry Rozier. And I think definitely the return of Aron Baynes, I think we can talk about more, but he just adds a lot of a defensive presence to that second unit. But they were great there. Like, you, like, after the Raptors come out and score 36 points in a quarter to basically to go for 9 minutes and this hold them to eight. And they, like, the Celtics really dominated that second quarter. Of course, in the final 3 minutes, Kawhi kind of was went off a bit. I think he scored like 9 of 11 points in that final 3 minutes of that half. But this, it was really the second unit who kind of like put this game in reach. And so when the Celtics, they lost the third quarter, but they still kind of went into the fourth quarter with a lead. It's because they built this big lead up in the second quarter, and it was really that second unit. Creating it was basically the bench unit with Marcus Smart, and they were just hounding them on defense. It created a lot of opportunities, and that's kind of like why they were in this game. Of course, it couldn't be a Celtics game without them having one terrible quarter, but it's just that second quarter, it was like that was their first moment of resilience. That's what got them back into this game, and then that kind of set them up for Kyrie to do what Kyrie did in the fourth.
So we have a terrible quarter, we have Aron Baynes, and we have Kyrie Irving apologizing to LeBron James. All of those things we're going to talk about after the break when we come back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Third quarter rolls around and we're watching the clock. I'm watching the clock and I'm thinking right around the 7 minute mark, this Celtics lead is starting to whittle down. And it got down to like 12 and then it got down to 10. And I'm thinking, here comes the swoon. But I will say, Sam, that I don't think this was similar to the Orlando or the Brooklyn third quarter. Yes, it was a problem in the third quarter, but I think this time it might have been a little bit more of a coincidence that it happened in the third quarter, because I think Toronto, there wasn't one. Well, okay, Serge Ibaka had 11 points in the third quarter, but I don't think that was the same kind of domination that Terrence Ross or D'Angelo Russell had. I think this was just a case of the Raptors making a lot of shots and the Celtics weren't. The Celtics shot 8 of 23 in that quarter. They shot 2 of 6 from 3. They didn't hit shots, and Toronto did. It didn't feel like one of those completely out-of-control third quarters. It just felt like this was Toronto in the quote-unquote game of runs, and this was the run that they made.
Yeah, and it felt like the Celtics kind of were letting – like they were really putting a lot of pressure on the screens and kind of showing hard when guys were coming around the screens and kind of – if Serge Ibaka wants to go off in the mid-range, or if Greg Monroe, shout out to Moose, a lot less fun when he's making a bunch of shots against the Celtics, but still a Moose fan here. But it felt like the Celtics were really, like, that's the shot they were going to live with. And through three quarters, Serge Ibaka had 20 shots. And, like, that's a win in my book. Like, he's not going to be a three-point shooter. He missed all his three-point shots tonight. If he's going to be moving in the short role, you just kind of have to live with Serge Ibaka taking those shots. And he made a lot of them, certainly in the third quarter. It was 5 of 8. But, I mean, it wasn't the kind of this domination. It wasn't giving up a bunch of open threes like we saw against Orlando or we saw against the Nets. And then, like, I thought the Celtics really saved it towards the end of the third quarter by going to Al Horford. He had that his one thunderous dunk. And then I thought they were really searching him out. There was one possession that I thought was great because Toronto was switching a lot, basically everything. And they got Danny Green basically switched on to Al Horford, and Terry Rozier had the ball and immediately recognized it and realized he couldn't get it into Horford himself. He swung it to Kyrie, who immediately basically was like a touch pass right into Horford, who got an and one. And so that was like a huge moment in the game because the Celtics had given up what was a 13-14 point lead at there, and it got down to two. But then Horford scores, I think, like 6 points to end that quarter and kind of put them back up. So it definitely wasn't like kind of this complete loss of control. It's just like if a good team like the Raptors are going to make shots like that, you kind of just have to weather that run. And the Celtics did a good job of that, and then kind of responding and just like, of course, it involved an irrational smart three. I mean, that is kind of what happens. But they did a good job of weathering that run and then going back to just like being very deliberate and trying to get Horford the basketball. And so it's like you live with Ibaka doing that to you because it's not Danny Green hitting threes and it's not Kawhi hitting threes and it's not anyone else taking threes. I mean, it's just the mathematics of basketball. You live with that mid-range shot now.
And you also lived with Aaron Baines taking a three, which he did, and hit a big one, part of Aaron Baines' return to the Boston Celtics lineup after a few weeks with the broken hand. Baines' numbers, not particularly gaudy, but 9 points, 5 rebounds, a couple of assists, a ton of screens. That
4 offensive rebounds.
Big 4 offensive rebounds was very big. The three that he hit put the Celtics tied this game at 92, and that's the three that kind of swung this game. That's where the things were starting to get away from the Celtics. Kawhi hit a shot. Monroe tipped one in, and Toronto took a 3-point lead. Aaron Baines tied it at 92, and then Boston really went from there. So afterwards, I mean, everybody loves Aaron Baines, and he's just, when he's talking to the media, he's great because he's just like, I'm not boxing out there. The hand's fine. Like he's been pestering Brad Stevens for 2 weeks to get it back into the lineup. And he finally made it. He didn't play a ton, played 15 minutes in this game. I think partly because he's gassed. He's playing actual NBA minutes is hard and he's got to work himself back into it. But the minutes that he played were very, very effective.
No, he was just very solid, made an impact on the offensive end, made the made that huge three, but it's just it feels like it's been so long that the Celtics have been at full strength that you don't realize like how insane their depth is. But he's like, we saw both Ojale and Tice were DNPs tonight, and just I'm a huge fan of both Semi and Tice, but for their roles. Like the Celtics only had to go with 9 guys tonight. They didn't have to go deep into that bench. And Baines is just such a stronger presence on, I would say, both ends of the court. Like he's clearly a defensive rock back there and an actual rim protector. But I mean, his ability to make the three is kind of gravy at this point. That's like, I'll take any Baines three I can get, but I'm not expecting it. But even his just ability to knock down some mid-range shots and then be a presence on the offensive glass, he is so much more impactful size-wise than Tice is. It's just the Celtics' depth is that much better when you have Baines on the court. And so it was a very solid performance from him. And it's like Al Horford actually ended up playing 33 minutes tonight. But you can just, when they're able to go 48 minutes with Baines and Horford at the five. That just makes their team that much stronger on the defensive end. I thought it's going to be huge moving forward to have them back. I don't think people realize how important Aaron Baines is, just from a one, he's just very, very competent defensively, but two, it's just he's not a negative on the offensive end. And so when you can have kind of those two-way players, it's just you don't need to drain Al Horford, who possibly has a very hurt knee and was doing a little bit of a limping after the game in the locker room. But it's just their depth is like that much better when you can play Aaron Baines as your ninth man.
I will say that Al Horford's limping in the locker room may also be part of pulling his feet directly out of that ice bucket and trying to walk after that. That's not easy.
Oh, I didn't consider that.
Oh my God. As a person who has stuck feet in an ice bucket before, it is not pretty. It sucks. For people who don't know, like after games, they take one of those big mop buckets, you know, the bucket you put your mop, it's full of ice water, and guys stick their feet in there so they can ice their ankles. And you do that for like 20 minutes after a game, and you sit there with your feet in that thing. That is terrible. It's a horrible feeling. It sucks. So PTSD kicking in there for me.
I just want to make one more point about Horford before we get to Kyrie. Yes. Unprompted bringing out LeBron. His pick and pop game, like when he's hitting threes, I think he was, what, 3 of 4 tonight from three, and he had some big ones late. But it changes the offense so much if teams are just going to drop on Kyrie Irving and basically drop the big and try to stop him at the rim, and Horford is open at the top of the key and can knock down threes. It makes their offense so much more dynamic, and it's like opens up everything. And then on top of that, you can put him down on the baseline, and that's what we saw kind of down the stretch as Kyrie found him twice, just roving around in the paint. But his ability to kind of stretch the defense, and when he's knocking down threes, like their offense just looks so much better. And so I don't know if that's a knee thing. I don't know if it's being at home. I don't know if it's a comfortability thing. But just when he's knocking down threes, it's just such a good sign for the Celtics offense.
It makes it impossible, almost impossible, to stop the Celtics offense if he's hitting threes, because then that just opens up so much. If it opens up those lanes for Kyrie, then Kyrie can drive, and now the other guys have to collapse. That means that he can drive and kick, and that's how you get some of the 18 assists. So it's very, very important. I agree. Why don't we take a break? We'll come back with Kyrie's apology to LeBron and then some of your tweets in the junk drawer, and we'll wrap up the show. Coming right back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Game, Kyrie Irving stands there and he's talking to the media, and we're all just kind of assembled and just talking, blah, 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 blah. And then he says, you know, talking about the leadership in his comments after the Orlando game, he's saying, oh, yeah, I learned a couple of things and, you know, I figured out I can't do certain things certain ways. And then he says, I had to call LeBron and tell him I apologize for being that young player that wanted everything in his fingertips. And everybody's like, oh, you what now? You called LeBron James and apologize? And he did. He called LeBron James and apologized because he realized that he was once the young player that he's been criticizing, and he realizes how hard it is to deal with a guy that was thinking the way he was when he was in Cleveland. And it's just an interesting kind of introspective look and understanding of the kind of leader that he needs to be, while also, by the way, taking another kind of backhanded shot at his own guys, but, you know, still learning. I think everybody'd be like, just let him have this. But because he criticized himself, but then he compared himself to the guys and whatever. But focusing on the positive, he's at least trying to learn and trying to take the right steps as a leader, which I think is important.
Yeah, I'm definitely of two minds here where it's like, oh, it's very cool and mature for Kyrie Irving to acknowledge that he was like flawed in the past and like call up LeBron and admit to like being selfish while he was a player, but while he was with the Cavs. But then on the flip side of that, he's basically just calling the current young players selfish and acting like he did when he was a member of the Cavs. So, and I'm sure tomorrow we're going to get a lot more. It's like once Kyrie, like once you bring LeBron into this, and we saw this happen basically in the scrum, like the Celtics PR people tried to be like, last question after he basically gave that response, and it couldn't happen. And there was just like a noted yelling when people were trying to get their last LeBron question, and Kyrie had to tell everyone to relax, which is another funny moment. But we're going to get a lot of takes tomorrow about Kyrie and LeBron, and I'm sure we'll discuss it much further. But it was interesting because outside of LeBron quote, Kyrie also talked about how Jaylen Brown was right in talking about how there was no real need for like finger pointing, and he didn't think he went about it the right, like, and Kyrie didn't go about it in the right way. So, I mean, initially when I was just listening to the quotes, I thought it was like really Kyrie kind of taking responsibility for not being the best leader. And then the more I walked away from it, the more I thought about it. It was kind of a backhanded compliment, but in the moment it felt like Kyrie acknowledging what I did in Orlando was not the best thing I needed to do. I'm acknowledging how hard this is and I'm going to need help. But like, we're going to be better moving forward. I think it was just, it was just wildly like unprompted for him to bring that up. Like he definitely didn't have to do it. But I thought it was a cool moment just to see like a guy gain that perspective and like appreciate, like, and be willing to acknowledge that like you were shitty in your past. Cause a lot of people will be stubborn and just be like, we'll refuse to admit that.
Yeah. Look, he actually said what he said in Orlando when they said, what does this team need? And he says, experience. That's it. Experience. That's the exact same answer for what do you need to become a better leader? And that exact same answer played the exact same way, applies in the exact same manner. And it just, I think the irony of that kind of hit him afterwards, that he is still learning how to be this leader. This is who he wanted to be, and he said it after the game. I wanted this. I embrace this. I accept it. But at the same time, it's different for him, just like it's different for those guys who are playing, just like it's different for Brad Stevens coaching a team with these kinds of expectations to have them try to figure this out. This is different for just about everybody in there, except for maybe a couple of people. Like Al Horford has seen this before. Like he knew this was coming. I keep going back to the quote that he had back at the Fan Fest where he said sometimes it takes a whole season for a team to figure it out. And I don't know if he just said it because to say it, but it sounds prescient to me. But how many other guys have seen this level of expectation on a team and been one of the leaders? Nobody besides Horford, I don't think. So Kyrie's figuring it out. And I'm sure some people are going to have those takes. Some people are going to say that it was a backhanded slap. It definitely can be construed that way. But having been there and seen it, he, I think, was very introspective. I think that he understands. He even said that, you know, called it a bit of bullying. Like he is taking responsibility. I think it's a big, big deal considering the way those guys reacted after the Brooklyn game, especially Jaylen Brown. He said Jaylen Brown is right. This is important for him to kind of take this criticism, internalize it a little bit, learn from it, and try to get better. If he's going to expect the young guys on this team to take criticism and get better, then he has to do it himself. So those guys can see, hey, look, okay, I get it. He's trying and he's accepting it and he's learning and he's even reaching out to LeBron James, the guy that he couldn't get away from fast enough. Now he's going back and he's like, you know what? I'm starting to figure it out. Which, by the way, I wonder how the people in Cleveland are taking this, because this is going to be everywhere. It's like the headline across the NBA, Kyrie apologizes to LeBron. I wonder if the people are in Cleveland who are like, oh, really? Now you're apologizing? You couldn't do this while you were still in Cleveland and have this team still be really, really good?
I can't speak for the fine, fine citizens of Cleveland, but I have seen a number of Lakers fans already been like, oh, it's signs that Kyrie's going to rejoin LeBron, and it's just absolutely absurd. And Kyrie, in his own quote, was like talking about how he wanted to have his own team and he wanted to be the leader, and this was something he chose. So that's just classic NBA poppycock. but I am excited to hear Jay King's take on it all, because Jay King was very critical of Kyrie in the past couple of days. And the Raining Jays fans, the listener gods, are not happy with him. And so I'm excited to hear about what the kid's reaction was to Kyrie calling LeBron, because he was I'm going to say kind of a dick. So see if that continues. Jay was, not Kyrie.
No,
I mean, Kyrie was also, but Jay was, he matched the level.
It was an interesting reaction to Jay's comments for sure. All right, we'll leave that Kyrie stuff because we got to digest it and figure it out. We'll do another podcast tomorrow, and we'll, I'm sure, have more comments. I'm sure LeBron will have comments, and we'll react to that. So let's move on. We ask you to tweet us every game with the Rain and Jays and Rain and Junk hashtags for your informational and or goofy comments. Lots of comments. I can't get to all of them because we can't keep – I got to wrap this up sometime. So
we got
to,
only the good ones. I mean, we're going to skip over the bad ones. So you got to come. It's a meritocracy here on the
Rain and Jays. At Joey Angus 11. So far, the Celtics are playing like they're down 27, except they're not. Crazy. Yeah. This is the Celtics kind of that sense of urgency at home. So at JW Push 25, Mook and Smart for the epitome of no, yes players so often.
I don't think Mook is like that. I think Mook is a yes player, at least this season. He's shooting 45% from three. It's insane. He's actually had a couple of down games recently, and so I'm he's only 2 of 9 for tonight, but Mook is a yes guy.
Yeah, I think Mook is actually in a little bit of a slide, just kind of scuffling just a tiny bit. But he was due for a little bit of a step back, but I think he'll be fine. At E.H. Decker, are the Celtics going to live or die on Gordon Hayward's performances for the rest of the year in the playoffs? Not live or die necessarily, but when he's good, things are so much easier. When he's bad, it's harder to win. I'm subscribing to the Jackie McMullen train of thought, though, that as time moves forward, these guys will, Gordon Hayward will be better. And I think we're seeing it up and down for sure, but I think he'll be better and it won't be as wild.
Yeah, and you saw the kind of the impact of it was like, the first half, second half, good Gordon Hayward and not as great Gordon Hayward, especially on the second unit offense. When he was being aggressive in the first half, he ended up with 16 points, 5 assists in that first half, and everything was clicking for them. He was kind of less effective in the second half, and the second unit struggled to score. But I thought it was interesting tonight was I think he mentioned to Lisa Salters of ESPN that he still is in pain. He still doesn't have the confidence where like it he should be, and he kind of expects those things to return in April. And so it's going to be a process. Wouldn't be surprised if like all these home games are kind of better for him. I don't know if like traveling makes his ankle flare up or anything like that. But clearly when he plays better, they're going to have a much better chance to win because he's so important to that second unit. But I just don't know. I have no idea what the timetable is. Like if it could be May and it could be like the second round of the playoffs or it could be next season. I have no idea when he's going to be fully back, if he's going to be fully back.
Right. So I'm sorry. I just got distracted by a Rain and Junk tweet, which I thought was hilarious. Okay. We'll get to that in a minute, I'm sure. Why at Beer Gym? Why is it so hard for Tatum to remember to just sidestep that pump fake three for another three instead of constantly stepping in for a bad two? He did it again tonight. I think he should. I'm not even down with the sidestep three anymore. I just jump into the guy that's flying at you. Just jump into him and get the three free throws and forget the, you know, taking the three, which is a much lower percentage shot than three free throws for a good free throw shooter. Go ahead and take your free throws and get free money and let everybody else rest, put a foul on them, get them a step closer to the penalty. Just do that. That should be what he should be doing instead of anything besides stepping into the long two.
Of all the options, the one step into the long two is the worst of them. But
absolutely.
I will give Tatum credit. I thought he made and recently has been making a considerable effort to try and get to the rim, especially off those kind of pump fakes. It just so happened tonight that he was when he tried to get to the rim, then he really couldn't do anything with it. And he had he really struggled tonight, not one of the best games. And then it came to the fourth quarter, and he finally was able to get to the rim, got an and one, and then knocked down a huge three and had six huge points in the fourth quarter. So, I mean, you have to give him credit for kind of showing up in that moment and still pulling down those 10 rebounds. But I think anything other than the step in two, but I think he's actually been trying to make an effort to try and get to the rim. And the Celtics tonight, I hate to complain about the whistle, but the whistle sucked tonight. I thought the Raptors were the Celtics came out and were the much more aggressive team, much more physical team. And it feels like they all know that the free throws are an issue and they're trying to draw fouls and they're like trying to initiate contact. And it just wasn't happening for them. Like Kyrie, like barely got a 3-point play in the final minutes there to kind of bring the Celtics, I think was within one at that point, but there was a lot of ticky-tacky fouls out there, and I thought a lot of it went towards or did not benefit the Celtics. And I'm not normally a whistles guy, but tonight it felt pretty bad.
Yeah, there are a couple of questionable ones there. At Live Green or Die, big wins like this are why I'm not down on this team. The capability is there, just patiently waiting for consistency. We've said it all the time. These guys, it's mental. It's mental, and they just – it's not that they can't do it. It's sometimes that they won't. So we'll leave it at that. At Prof Chop, you think having Aaron Baines back helped a little bit? Question mark, question mark, question mark.
The big. I feel like that's a rhetorical question.
I think the – when you do it as one question mark, it's a legitimate one. When you start adding anything beyond two, it just increases the – kind of sarcastic, rhetorical nature of it. The big Aussie was active in all areas. The clutch three from the top of the key. Great to see him out there again. Everybody says we missed Aaron Baines after the game. And let's get one more. I will say, okay. From the Celtics Reddit podcast, are we getting a post-game Rain and Jays tonight? I will address this here.
We're recording it right now.
We're recording it right now. And it's currently 1:50 a.m. My new job has certain responsibilities that I have to fulfill. Before this, I would be able to just record immediately after a game. So for those of you who are wondering why the podcasts are late, this is why. My new job, which has been great and awesome, but it's also very busy and it's a lot of work, and I have other obligations that come before recording the podcast right away. So I have to do some writing, and then I'm recording the podcast, and then I'm going to edit the podcast, and I'm going to go do some more writing. So it's just a lot, and I just hope people understand that there's a little bit more of a delay now moving forward. We're figuring the whole thing out. Okay, Rain and Junk time. Go ahead, Jam. It's all yours.
All right, going into the Rain and Junk. Let's see. Question from, I never know how to read this handle, but he's a frequent creator and a great poster. WH Low Haiti, would Smarf be the best wrestler on the Celtics? The elbow was devastating. And then it's this, an amazing picture of a Photoshop of some sort of wrestler. I'm not one of these experts that can identify them.
I'm assuming it's the Macho Man Randy Savage, but
does he have a famous elbow?
He has a famous elbow.
What? So what? Like, apparently Kyle Lowry died tonight.
And, yeah.
I don't know what happened. I just was like looking at the play. Kyrie had a crazy save, and I look back down and he's like just a heap on the ground. And then Smarf came in and dunked on him and basically fell on him. And I was just like, I was convinced he had an ACL tear or something just the way he was on the ground. But I guess he got hit in the elbow or like in the face earlier. Yeah. It was all very confusing.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think he got poked in the eye and he just stayed down at the beginning of the thing. He just stayed down. And then after it happened, I'm like, oh, my God, poor Kyle Lowry. Like, the dunk and the fall, like he got hit and then he got hit again. It's kind of funny. He's fine. It's funny because he's fine.
It's also funny because he's a flop artist. I mean, him and Smart going at it. There's a sequence there when they just tried to post up Smart on Lowry like three times in a row, and Lowry just basically outsmarted Smart and just like flopped his way. He's getting flops left and right. And it's when you can combine the wagon of Yabu with the flopping of Smart, it's just, you tip your cap to that. Kyle Lowry, you're a known player. So, I mean, I'm glad he's no longer the most effective offensive player, but he's still doing things out there. Moving on to Liberty Uprising. He says, at both of us and says, getting ready for the podcast after this win. It's a gif of Oprah giving away her car, but it says, you get a taco, you get a taco, you get a taco. And that's just fantastic gif usage. That's fantastic stuff. Matt Decker retired. I don't know what CDRE stands for, but I'm guessing it's some sort of military rank. Is that a banana in your pocket, or is the erotic city back in town? Fair point. I thought the ball movement was great tonight. How many did they have over 30 assists tonight? You're damn right they did. I mean, it helps when Kyrie goes for 18, but I thought the ball movement was definitely solid. And so it's both. Erotic City was back, and I have a banana in my pocket.
Damn it. I was going to make that joke.
At Hate It or Leave It, Smarf made the Claw laugh when they dapped up after the game. What do you think he said? Did he plant a Smarf virus that changed the Claw's inner code? That was just a hilarious way to refer to Kawhi. I don't know. I don't know what you can say to Kawhi to make him laugh. But anyone out there listening right now needs to go listen to the Kawhi laugh version of Round Ball Rock, because you can watch it for hours. It's fantastic.
It's a good one.
Just shout out to Jay King, because Fred Van Vliet was terrible tonight. And I'm just going to move on to my personal junk drawer and wrap it up. I'm going to sound like an old man here, but it took them like, what, 20 minutes to start the actual game? It wasn't tip off till 8:20 tonight. It was absurd. Just to get Paul Pierce and Stan Van Gundy in a pregame show. You can't start that at 7:45. It was very upsetting.
Yeah, I agree. That makes for a very late night for all of us.
And then they do the anthem, and then they wait 15 minutes, and then they just bring out some of those weird flames. The flames at the start of the thing are just the most unnecessary thing in all of sports. Talk about our favorite segment of the day for In Between Entertainment. All the players name their favorite cartoons growing up. Most importantly, Aaron Baines is a Simpsons fan, which is not surprising, because it seems like all of Australia loves The Simpsons, but it basically means I have to talk to him about The Simpsons. So that's fun news, because he's a delight to talk to. And then also Al Horford, I thought he was going to say SpongeBob, but then he said Scooby-Doo. And I don't know. That was huge news in my book. Jalen was pretty much full homicidal tonight, trying to go after a dunk. Which is classic Jalen. I thought he played a pretty good game. Stats didn't show it, but he was playing that very aggressive 0.5 basketball that Brad likes to talk about. But that dunk attempt, I don't know how many dunk. I think he's probably like shooting 40% on homicide dunks this year. Like he's definitely landed a number of them, but he's missed his fair share of them. But I just love that he is goes after it.
I love the term homicide dunks.
I just coined it. It was, but I enjoyed it as well. All right, let's wrap it up. Stephon Marbury was there for some reason, and talking in the front row. And I saw a picture of him talking to Yabu, and I can only imagine they were talking about eating Vaseline. I don't know what else they would be talking about, but Stephon Marbury, known Vaseline eater, was in the crowd tonight and gave Yabu a hug, and I saw a picture of it. Finally, Jason Tatum has robot shoes. He debuted them tonight. Apparently, they're like Reebok pumps, but instead of having to pump, you just press a button on your app, and the pressure gets tighter on your shoes. So, I guess that's cool. I don't know why you need that, but robot shoes.
I feel like that's something that should be sold alongside the juice loosener, and I can't believe they invented it.
What is the juice loosener?
Are you kidding me?
No, not at all.
The juice loosener created by Dr. Nick Riviera?
I'm looking it up right now, but that seems like a Simpsons thing.
It is a Simpsons thing. It's the I can't believe they invented it with Troy McClure and Dr. Nick. It's where he says, until now, this was the only way to get juice for an orange. And he presses it up against his head. And Homer, pressing the juice, the orange against his head, says, you mean there's a better way? I can't believe I stumped you on a Simpsons thing.
I'm reading about the episode now is Marge in Chains from the fourth season, where she gets arrested for shoplifting. That was a cool thing. I was just reading a book about The Simpsons, and they were talking about kind of how they structured their plots. And they're like, oh, yeah, we always started off with something. And the very first scene had never had anything to do with the rest of the episode. Like, they were just starting in random place. And, like, the Juice Loosener is a perfect example, because then that happens, and then Marge gets arrested, and you don't hear about the Juice Loosener for the rest of the episode.
Oh, no, never again. Never again. But that has one of the great lines, because he flips it on, and it sounds like a freaking lawnmower going off, and he goes, it's Whisper Quiet!
Oh, Dr. Nick.
Oh, go you. I sent a link on that out tonight anyway. Anyway, go ahead.
Finally, when Jason Tatum was talking about this pregame, my dumbass ended up like in one of the videos of people talking about it, and I became a meme.
You did.
I got meme pretty good. I had a picture of me, basically like really resembles the Isaiah pick. I had a good kind of two pick with Isaiah pick, and then me smiling after that after someone made a dumb joke. But it feels good to be memed, you know. It's like you've been part of this weird Celtics Twitter game for so long, and you'll kind of want to see your name in lights, or your dumb face in lights. And that's what happened to me tonight. And so, thanks to the people who believed in me, I want to thank to the people who were there from the beginning and just the people who posted. It was fantastic. I could do it again. Maybe I'll just start kind of jostling for position in scrum, so I get more face time, because it's fantastic.
Now you're trying and it's not going to work.
That's true. You know, I tried to let like people get in the way. Normally I'm like, don't want to be in the scrum. I was like, I don't have a real job to do. Someone else probably needs this sound. I'm just standing there like reading Twitter on my phone, but they caught me tonight and I got memed.
This is your, I didn't do it moment. I didn't do it. And now you're going to become huge. And next thing you know, you're going to whizzle wazzle and everybody's going to hate you.
Now that's a Simpsons reference I get.
There you go. Thank you. I had to give you one more chance. All right. That's it. Thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you've enjoyed this episode enough to subscribe. I hope you subscribers go ahead and share the podcast. Give us that 5-star rating. And I hope you enjoy continuing to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King.